Welcome to the Magic and Alchemy podcast, where we talk about witchcraft, setting intentions, forgotten folklore, and mythology. Created by Tamed Wild, Magic and Alchemy is a collection of stories, rituals, and articles crafted by a variety of creators and writers, including myself, Kate Ballou, and my co-host, Kristen Lisenby.
Hello, and welcome back to the Magic and Alchemy podcast. I'm Kristen Lisenby.
And I'm Kate Ballou.
Kate, last time I saw you, it was in person. We were in Salem. It feels like yesterday, but also a million years ago. So how are you?
It's so wild. I know, just like us in our haunted Airbnb giant slumber party. Mm-hmm. I miss you already. Come back.
Soon.
New York City needs you. But how was your trip to California?
It was amazing. Thank you for asking. Listeners, I think we mentioned it very briefly on a previous episode, but Kate and I had a little coven meeting in Salem at the end of February with Tamed Wild creatrix Shelby Bundy, Marissa Cottrell, Caitlin Barone, Daniel Freed, and two husbands, one muggle, one alien, who I must say fit in so well with the coven.
Yes, we love
so
it.
So proud. Yeah, we got to get our aura photos taken. We thrifted for treasures and visited every magic shop we could find. And it was nothing short of a dream trip in such a special place. I think it was our first time there for all of us.
Yeah.
And then from there, I hopped over to California to see my parents and sister, nephews, in-laws, friends. I was there for a couple of weeks, loaded up on secondhand books and tacos and all sorts of random things from home that you don't realize you miss, you know, until they're gone. But now I'm back on the island, feeling so grateful for all of it, for all those adventures, and just to be back with you, Kate, talking about all of our favorite things. But before we get into those today, how are you? I'm admiring your tan right now. I know our listeners can't see, but I know you also went on a little family trip yourself.
Yes. Listeners, definitely maybe Kristen will put in her Instagram stories again her book haul from her trip, because it is impressive in a really just cool continuum way of books. So have to take a note of that. And then, yeah, I went to the Florida Keys to hang out with my mom and my stepdad, which was a lot of fun. Seemed like the perfect welcoming back to spring. This tan is a banishing spell for my seasonal depression, which worked great. But my mom and I, we did a little ocean spring ritual like we talked about in that Ostara episode a couple of weeks ago or a few weeks ago. So that was kind of special to do the research and then enact it in a big way, because as we talk about, the big rituals are sometimes hard to carve out the time for, but it was truly magical. Good welcome back to spring. And yesterday when we're recording this, I started my third and final year of apprenticeship with Robin Rose Bennett, which is just also wild because I feel like we were just speaking about beginning this journey on the podcast here. And now here we are.
Yeah, I also remember when you started, I think it was around the time we started hosting Magic and Alchemy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we started Samhain of 2020, and then I started the apprenticeship Ostara of 2021.
Yeah, I don't know. Podcasting feels like a time capsule sometimes, and I'm just really grateful for it. Shall I share today's listener question?
Please.
So at Jennifer Green Art asked, how do you deal with grief and disappointment? And Kate, I know we've talked grief before many times on and off air. So mm-hmm. what thoughts do you have for Jen and any listeners who are wondering the same?
I love this question, Jen and Kristen. Thank you. It's just such a rich and complex question. And I think for me personally, spring always brings a lot of grief to the surface. And it's such a reminder that in every rebirth, there's also a death of sorts. And I would love to read this releasing grief ritual from my teacher, Robin Rose Bennett. And this is in her book, Healing Magic, A Greenwich Guidebook to Conscious Living. I've used this ritual before. I think it might be of support to some of our listeners. It has been to me. And also this book is just on the essentials reading list. So here it is. Quote, go outside to a place where you have total privacy, or at least a reasonable amount if total privacy is unavailable or uncomfortable to you. Dig a small hole in the earth. Ask Mother Earth to help you release your grief. The grief can be over a specific thing or a general feeling that is weighing you down. Cry over and into the hole in the earth for as long as you need to. Feel her receive your tears without judgment. And know that the earth can receive anything, feeling, energy, illness, that you are ready and willing to let go of without harm to her. She uses what you release as compost. Honor your feelings and ask her to help you transform them into creative energy that you can use to share your unique gifts. Fill the hole back up. Cover the opening with soil and rocks that you moved and tap them back down with a gentle, loving touch. You may wish to leave an offering of your own on top, such as a crystal or a flower, some seeds, or a piece of fruit. I have heard variations of this practice from many different people, and thank Lucy Yepalaudin, a Jemez Pueblo elder and artist from New Mexico, for originally describing it to me and for offering it to my best friend who was in need at the time. This practice can be used as often as needed and is amazingly helpful and comforting. It can also serve to replenish the connection that you have never truly lost with Earth. End quote. Kristen, how do you ritualize, release, or work with grief?
Well, this question feels quite synchronistic because I think it was just yesterday, Kate, that you and I were talking about Mara June, who goes by Mother Wart and Rose online, and their grief spells. And in their latest entry, Grief Spells for the Spring Equinox, Losing Joy and Planting Ourselves as Seeds, Mara talks about the Tower card in tarot, a card long associated with dread and death and endings. And in this entry, they say, quote, in some images, those jumping from the tower are throwing seeds. We can also interpret them to be the seeds themselves, as a friend and artist Kim Wayman shared with me. The Tower card is about being destroyed by massive change, and it is also about feeding life and death, how brokenness can make good soil. The Tower tells a story about the trickster power of grief to move us, to change us, to bring us to the question of what to do to plant ourselves as seeds. For a seed to sprout, it must crack open. To flower is to fall open and apart. Some plants, like the anemone, have seeds that bury themselves and are said to grow from ruins where blood has been spilled and tears of sorrow have hit the earth. The Tower tells a story about losing, failing, cracking, and collapsing as a sacred identity from which life springs, rather than purely something to fear. End quote. And I just love this imagery of seeds and grief, and also the ritual you shared from Robin Rose, because the first thing I thought of from like a magical perspective when this question showed up was to send that grief into the earth, you know, pour it into the soil in the form of tears, a song, or even just a conversation, and ask that Mother Nature, Gaia, whatever earthly deity or energy speaks to you, to hold that grief for us, you know, transmute it, compost it, like you said, and then when ready, hand it back to us in a way that we recognize the exchange that's taken place.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And big thank you to Mara and to Robin and to all of you listeners and your good soil. I'm so excited for our guest today. Kristen, do you want to introduce her?
Of course. So today, Kate and I are talking horoscopes and moon signs with astrologer and author Annabelle Gatt. Annabelle Gatt has been writing the daily and monthly horoscope column at Vice since 2015 and is the author of the books The Astrology of Love and Sex and The Moon Sign Guide. Certified by the International Society for Astrological Research, Annabelle loves teaching others about astrology. She's presented talks on astrology, tarot, and the occult for over a decade and is known for her grounded and humorous approach. You can learn more about her upcoming mentorship program in our show notes. Collaborations include the supercharged candle with snakes for hair, as well as the cult favorite perfume created with celeb perfumer Marissa Zappas, Annabelle's birthday cake. She is also an expert on tarot, is both a cat and a dog person, a fan of perfume and interior design, and loves clowns. Why clowns? She associates them with the Fool in the tarot card, number zero. Zero is nothingness, where all potential stems from. How could you not like clowns when they symbolize limitless possibility? That's Annabelle's take, anyway.
Annabelle joined us from her home via Zoom in Brooklyn. Hello and welcome back to the Magic and Alchemy podcast. I'm Kate Ballou.
And I'm Kristen Lisenby. And welcome, Annabelle. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast this week. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to get us started, and for our listeners who might be meeting you for the first time today, would you mind sharing a little bit about you and your work in your own words?
Sure. So I think most people know me from my daily and my monthly horoscopes at Vice. And I'm also the author of two books, The Astrology of Love and Sex and The Moon Sign Guide. And yeah, I am an astrologer, an astrology teacher, and a tarot reader, and just a lover of all things occult and mystical.
I love that. And, you know, we also really love to ask our guests about their big three in astrology. So would you mind sharing yours and then also maybe what these signs mean to you?
Sure. So I'm an Aries sun, Scorpio moon, and Capricorn rising. So what does it mean to me? Well, so the sun has to do with our destiny in life, in addition to kind of being like our personality and kind of, you know, the sun is what makes us shine. And it kind of speaks to like our purpose. And I think, you know, my sun in Aries means many different things to me, but something that I've been thinking a lot about lately is this concept of firsts. You know, Aries is the first sign on the zodiac wheel, and Aries is often described as rushing ahead into new things and being very intrepid and being like a pioneer and like not being afraid to be the one who goes first, like kind of being this adventurer. But I think there's another side to firsts as well. Something else that people say about Aries is that they are great at starting things, but not necessarily finishing them. And I think that that can be true, but you know, the sun is not just our personality, but it's kind of our destiny. And there are these stories that we have about the zodiac signs that are kind of only half the story. So for example, with Aries, Aries is often the first to do something. But part of like the Aries, I don't know if struggle is the right word, but I think maybe like lesson is to be able to do something for the first time and really be able to see it through successfully and to not be afraid of doing the first. I have no idea if I'm making sense right now. But, you know, we see this with other zodiac signs too. The Taurus that can't relax, even though we always say Taurus is so chill. You know, the Gemini who's really shy, even though we always say Gemini is so talkative. You know, the Libra who's always looking for love, where is the love of their life? You know, we always say Libra is the sign of relationships. And so every zodiac sign has these stories that we ascribe to them. And part of the destiny of each zodiac sign is being able to either overcome or achieve or to work with these archetypes that like, or kind of like stories that we assign to all the signs. Am I making sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. What does being an Aries mean to me? Lately, I've been thinking a lot about firsts, and I've been thinking about how there have been so many instances in my life where I'm doing something for the first time and I can't just start and give up, you know, because I've like committed to it and I have to finish it. And the first time you do something, it's always the hardest because you don't really have a blueprint for how it's done. You don't really have like a groove for how it's going to go. And so I think me kind of realizing my Aries greatness, which I know sounds like super, you know, egotistical, but I hope everyone is realizing their own zodiac sign's greatness too.
Yeah.
So the Aries greatness is being like, oh, I'm doing something. I'm doing it for the first time and I'm not going to be too intimidated by the process where I feel like I can't finish it. I'm going to actually be able to finish it. So for example, with astrology, I've been studying astrology basically my whole life. It's something I have a lot of experience with, but within my life as an astrologer, there are many things I've had to do for the first time that seemed impossible, but I still managed to do it. So one example is writing a book. I had already had a horoscope column for years before I started writing a book, but writing a book is like its own animal, you know, it's mm-hmm. own thing. And it's when you're the first time you write one, you're like, oh, wow. Like I've never done this before. Like I have to figure out how to do it. Or even with like podcasting, I think anyone who's had a podcast before, it's like talking is the easy part, actually editing it and figuring out how to get it on different streaming platforms. Like that's hard. So, or if you start your own business, you might be an amazing astrologer, amazing tarot reader, but at some point you're going to be like, oh, it's tax time. I have to figure out how to do my taxes. So even if you have a lot of experience in something, there's always going to be this new thing that comes up that you are going to have to put your fears aside and say, okay, I've never done this before, but I'm going to throw myself into it and I'm going to get it done. So lately I've been thinking about how I have been through that process of doing something for the first time so many times that I really have a lot of confidence now at this point about doing things I've never done before. And lately I found myself doing some things I'd never done before. And I noticed that intimidation I used to feel, it doesn't really come up anymore. Now I just sort of know that even though I'm still figuring it out, I know that I can do it. So for example, I was never good at math growing up, but this year I decided, you know what? I'm going to take a math class just because I know that kill it now. I know that I could, because I know I have skills now that I just didn't have when I was like, you know, in middle school or a teenager, or, you know, like I didn't have like the confidence or the skills, and now I do. And, you know, each week we get these assignments and each week I'm like, I've never done this. I don't understand statistics, so hard, you know, and I still, each week my Aries sun goes, you can do it. This is the first time you're doing it, but you've done so many things for the first time before. So I know many people are listening and they're like, I'm not an Aries, but I do things all the time for the first time. And, you know, you're not alone, Miss Aries, like everyone goes through this. So yeah, that's true. And something we have to remember is that we have each and every zodiac sign in our chart. Even if you have no planets in Aries, Aries rules one of your houses. So we all have an experience with having to overcome the intimidation of doing something for the first time. And if what I'm saying it sounds familiar to you, maybe take a look at where you have Aries in your chart, what house it's in, and maybe that will be an interesting thing for you to explore. That's my sun.
I love that.
And then my moon, I think we're going to talk a lot about the moon, but in general, I would say my moon in Scorpio, I think that's, you know, where, you know, I'm very emotional. I'm very spiritual. The moon has a lot to do with like our memories and how we kind of digest past experiences. And I'm always really interested in like human nature and like why people have done what they did and like where they came from in order to get to that place where that thing happened. You know, whether that's myself or someone else. And I think that is very much the Scorpio moon. And I think my Scorpio moon also makes me very private. And one of the things that you know, we talked about via email before recording, is that a lot of times I don't talk about my sun, moon, and rising. And there's two reasons for that. One, because my Scorpio moon is very private, but the other is because I think it's boring. And let me, now I will transition to talk about my rising sign, which is Capricorn. A lot of people foolishly call Capricorn a boring sign, but this is couldn't be further than the truth. You know, Capricorn is associated with the devil and the tarot, which is, I mean, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It doesn't get any less boring than that. Capricorn is not boring, but if you have a Capricorn rising, you want to bring utility to everything you do. So if I'm going to talk about my sun, moon, and rising, I'm going to try to make it as not boring as possible and at least try to make it so that when people are listening to me talk about it, they can be like, oh, I just learned something about astrology. I learned something that I might be able to apply to myself. So I think, you know, the rising sign is how we try to show up in the world and how we interface with others. And it's always really important to me to be useful and to be helpful and to be like building something. So that's my sun, moon, and rising.
Love. I'm engaged to a Cap rising Scorpio moon. So,
oh, cool.
And Kristen's our resident Cap witch here too. So lots of Capricorn Scorpio energy going on.
Yeah.
Super excited to talk more about moon signs, though. Kristen and I recently picked up copies of your book, The Moon Sign Guide. And Kristen has a Taurus moon. I have an Aries moon. Can you share a little bit about your book, the intention behind writing it? You talked a little bit about that just now. And then what you hope people take away from reading it.
So The Moon Sign Guide, this is my latest book. I had so much fun writing it. Writing each chapter, I just fell in love with all of the moon signs all over again. And the reason I wrote this book is simply because I just think moon signs are really interesting. It's like the moon symbolizes this very deep and hidden part of ourselves. So I think it's a very kind of rich thing to explore. Many people are very familiar with their sun sign, maybe less so with their moon sign. So I just wanted to write something that might be illuminating for people. And the book goes through each of the 12 zodiac signs and kind of explores them from many different angles, from what their early life might have been like, you know, how they might be in relationships. There's even compatibility sections in each chapter. I even talk about the progressed moon, which I think we're going to talk about later. And basically, I wrote this book because I think moon signs are super interesting. I think I have a juicy perspective on them, and I want people to engage with their moon sign as much as they do their sun sign.
And in the introduction of your book, you write, "While our sun sign symbolizes our ego and will and is an outward-facing part of our personality, the moon sign represents our internal environment, our emotions, memories, and subconscious." So can you share a little bit more about the moon sign in the birth chart and why it's important, what lessons can be found there maybe, and then why do you love exploring this aspect of a birth chart?
Absolutely. So, like I mentioned in the intro, the sun is this very outward facing part of ourself. And as I mentioned earlier at the top of this episode, the sun can also kind of be our destiny, whereas the moon is kind of where we've come from. So if the sun is the future and kind of like what we're striving to be in this world, the moon is kind of how we got here. So in some ways, the moon can symbolize our past. In other ways, it might not objectively be the past, but it could just be the way that we perceive the past, the way that we reflect on our memories. So the way that we maybe interact with our past. The moon also symbolizes what makes us feel safe and secure and comfortable, which is one of the reasons why it's such an important part of the chart, because if we're moving about the world trying to get our If we're moving about the world and we're trying to achieve the goals of our sun sign, the moon sign is going to point to how we can do that and sort of stay grounded and feel secure and feel nurtured. You know, the moon is so much about nurture. The moon has also a lot to do with safety. So that kind of ties back into nurture. So memories, past, comfort, nurture, safety. It's also really important in our relationships, because I say this all the time, whether or not you're having a one-night stand or you're you know, spending your entire life with someone, the moon has to feel safe. Like you can't, if you're having a one night stand, but you know, you feel totally unsafe and everything's weird, then that's not going to be a great experience, right? You want to be able to feel in your body and feel like you're comfortable. And that's what the moon is all about. So the moon sign is really interesting to explore because I think we all sort of already know what sort of makes us feel comfortable. But I think what's amazing about astrology is that it can kind of validate certain things for us. So you might already know that, for example, I have a Scorpio moon. I love nothing more than walking through a haunted house. You know what I mean? But then if I read something like that in a book, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, that's totally me. So it's sort of like, I don't necessarily think people are going to discover anything new about themselves by reading my book, but that's kind of the magic of astrology. It's like, you're not going to learn something new, but you might be validated, which is like, really, that's one of the coolest things about astrology is that it's this like commonly shared language. If, you know, if you're really into astrology and your other friends are really into astrology and you're like, oh, that was so Jupiter, like you instantly know what the other person means. And so that's what's kind of fun about reading astrology books is that there's sort of like this validation or this sort of like, yeah, this is this like common language. And of course, astrology was created by people. So it's inherently flawed and everyone's going to write about astrology from their own perspective. So people might read about their moon sign chapter in my book and be like, I don't agree with any of this, but that can kind of be, I don't want to say validating in its own way, but it sort of lets you kind of be like, oh, it kind of reminds you of who you really are by looking at what you know that you're not, you know? So if I write that your moon sign is really sentimental and you're not sentimental at all, then you're kind of, you know, validated in your own experience of like, no, I know I'm not sentimental. I know this is wrong. So that in and of itself kind of also is a self-revealing kind of thing by working with astrology. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think it's such a cool way to put it, like a validating or like seeing language. Like as an Aquarius sun, I didn't understand parts of myself until I came to astrology, read more about an Aries moon and was like, okay, this makes some of the aspects of myself make so much more sense. And then earlier too, what you were saying about how we all have all of the aspects in our chart. I think, you know, when I was reading your book, even though, you know, I might not have a Libra moon or this to like experience the emotional tenor or language of all of those signs and like think about them in people that I love or in different aspects of my own chart. Like, I think it's such an illuminating perspective.
Totally.
So Annabelle, I have another quote from your book I wanted to share if that's okay. So you write, mystics have long associated the moon with the mother archetype, and indeed the moon is like a womb. It is a metaphorical container for our feelings. Our emotions ebb and flow like the moon, always waxing and waning. Taking time to reflect on our moon sign provides a window into our deepest self, showing us what we need to feel secure and nurtured. And these words are just so beautiful and I love them so much. And, you know, they just got me wondering how you view and work with archetypes in your own practice.
Thank you. You know, when we think about archetypes from a Jungian perspective, archetypes are these symbols that are kind of always sort of unconsciously playing in the background and are universal. So when we're talking about astrology, we have these planets and we have the sun, which is like this archetype of like vitality and life and creativity and this thing that you're going to do. And we have the moon. And as I wrote in the book, it's, you know, the moon has long been associated with the mother, and mother can really mean anything. You know, we can be, no matter who you are, you can be a mother to the creative project that you've been incubating and growing and working on. There's archetypes have this universal quality about them. And no matter who you are, where you are, or what time period it is, there is this universal experience that humans have had of person who is nurturing me, loving me, caring for me, or cared for me in the past when I was a child, this person who kind of like contained things, held me, carried me around, and provided food, right? no matter who that person might have been. And, you know, we can slap the label mother on top of that, but that is a universal kind of like experience of either having had that or not having had that, and this awareness that that was lacking, that other people have this person who's housing them, clothing them, feeding them, caring for them, reading, singing them a song at night, but I don't have that, or, you know, whatever. So like, there's this awareness of that like existing, and that is universal. And like, since humanity began, so all of the planets in astrology kind of reflect these universal experiences that all people have always had. And something really fascinating about astrology is that as time goes on, we keep on discovering new planetary bodies, you know, Chiron, Sedna, Eris. So we kind of get these new archetypes like thrown in, and, you know, there's new aspects of ourselves as like, you know, just as humanity, on like new aspects of how we relate to life and like these stories that are happening around us, and whether or not we fit into them or we don't. Do we have that nurture in our life, or do we not have it? Anyway, I feel like I'm kind of on a tangent here, but basically, as an astrologer, the way that I work with archetypes is that I kind of view each planet as sort of having this universal story that like we all connect to, and that we all have some kind of experience with, whether we've had it or we feel like we're lacking it. And then the zodiac sign that planet is in is going to color more of like what that looks like for the person, the aspects it's making, the house that it's located in, any progressions that's going to add to the story. And I never look at astrology and say, oh, someone has this planet and this sign and this house making these aspects, so that means this person did go through this. I never look at it that way, because there's no way for us to know whether or not that's real or true. So the way that I look at it is, instead of using the chart to make statements about someone, I look at it as a way to like kind of ask questions. You know, the moon is in Scorpio, your moon is in Scorpio. Do you love going to graveyards? You have the moon in Aries. Do you feel like for things to feel safe and secure and comfortable, things need to be going along at like a fast pace? And if things slow down, does that kind of, you know, freak you out? And maybe an Aries moon is going to be like, no, I'm super, I don't need to rush. And that is going to be a really interesting Aries moon chart for me to look at, you know? So I always kind of look at it as, you know, it's not prescriptive. It's not like, oh, you have this and that sign, this is your archetype, and that must be how you experience things. It's just a language and a way to kind of look at it.
Yeah, little portals and questions.
Yeah.
You mentioned progressed moons earlier. Can you talk a little bit more about what that is and what that means?
Totally. So we are all born with the moon in a zodiac sign, but as we age and go through life, the moon actually progresses from one sign to the next. So about every 2.5 or so years, the moon is going to go from the sign it was in when you were born to the next one. So for example, if you're an Aries moon, depending on what degree the moon was at when you were born, at some point, the moon is going to enter Aries. So the moon is going to progress into a new sign about every 2 or so years. But the thing is, depending on what degree the moon was at when you were born, it's going to be different. So for example, if you were born when the moon was at 29 degrees, then it's going to go into the next sign very quickly afterward. So I hope that this isn't confusing for people who are listening. Basically, make it easy on yourself to an astrological calculator online or on an app, and you can calculate for yourself where the progressed moons were when you were born. But basically, every 2.5 or so years, the progressed moon is going to move, you know, into the next sign. You're born with the moon in a zodiac sign, but every 2.5 or so years, the moon is going to progress from one sign to the next. So you might have been born an Aries moon, but then when you're about 13 or so years old, your moon is going to be in Libra, right? And then when you're around 27, you're going to have your progressed lunar return, and that will be when the moon has returned back to Aries. So throughout our lives, the moon moves from one sign to the next, and this gives us an opportunity to interact with the world, learn about the world, learn about ourselves through the emotional lens of those different zodiac signs. So by the time you hit your progressed lunar return when you're 27, you have experienced life through the point of you have experienced the emotional part of life through the lens of each zodiac sign, making that a really powerful time in our lives. You know, the moon is again associated with that mother archetype. And around 27, for many people, it's like, well, have you figured out how to cook a meal for yourself? You know, have you figured out how to deal with your tummy ache? Like, you know, like have you, it's kind of like this, and sort of like this, like an initiatory period where it's like you really stepping into becoming your own nurturer. And it happens just before the Saturn return. You know, Saturn's often associated with, like, you know, the father archetype. If you go online, you're going to see many people refer to Saturn as daddy. So when you have your Saturn return at 29, that's kind of be like, that's sort of like when you step into kind of being your own, daddy in a way, you know, maybe having some kind of career high or really learning how to set limits and boundaries. So this period in the late 20s kind of sees returns of two kinds. We have the progressed lunar return, and then we have the Saturn return. So in our lives, as we move from one zodiac sign to the next by progression, we might find that different things make us feel safe or comfortable. So what works for you when your moon is progressed in Taurus might be very different from what works for you when your moon is progressed in Scorpio. So my book, each chapter at the end has a little paragraph that is just on the progressed placement. So what I like to encourage people to do is to pull up a list of what years they will have each, what years the progressed moon will be in what signs. So you can kind of read through the entire book and get a glimpse of where you might be emotionally. So you can actually read the whole chapter. Of course, you're going to have to adjust some of the words in your head. And if you're reading for the Leo moon chapter and you were not born with a Leo moon, then obviously when I'm talking about childhood, for example, that might not be exactly what your childhood was like, but you might find that during the time that your progressed moon is in Leo, you might remember aspects of your childhood that align with what I wrote in that chapter, or you might be thinking about that kind of theme in other people's lives, or thinking about, you know, how that did show up or how it didn't show up. So even though it's not going to exactly align with what took place for you then, you might notice that those themes are things that you're thinking deeply about. So you can certainly read the last section on the progressed moons for kind of a specific look at the progressed moon, but you can really read the whole chapter, because even though it's not going to be about your exact experience in life, it is going to illustrate what kind of things you might be thinking about during that period that the progressed moon is in that sign.
Mm. And so for our listeners, someone, like you said, can go onto like an astro calculator online and find that from the exact degree.
Yeah. So okay, cool. If someone wants to go to, for example, you know, astro.com or astro-seek.com, they both have astrological calculators, and you can just start, you can find where there's the progressed chart section, and then basically click through year by year and see where the progressed moon was. And then you can just write out a list for yourself. And then, you know, you can kind of also do it in your head. It will be a little bit off, but in general, when you're about 13, 14, the moon is in the opposite sign. Mm. And then it returns when you're 27. So when you're like 25-ish, it's probably going to be in the moon sign before yours, probably. But that's like a rough estimate. So you can get the exact by looking at a chart, but you can do a rough estimate in your head as well. And, you know, the progressed moon is very interesting because not only are you looking at life through the lens of these different zodiac signs, but the progressed moon is also going to be making aspects to your natal moon. So when you have your progressed lunar opposition, you know, if you were born with the moon in Gemini, then here you are as in your early teen years with your moon in Sagittarius, that's creating an opposition in your chart, which is sort of this release point. And if we think of the early teen years, for some people, they're very rebellious then, or they're really experimenting with something new. You know, those babyish things that used to comfort us, we're like, we don't want our blankie anymore. I'm 13 years old. You know, if your parent shows up to school with your favorite stuffed animal because you've been feeling unwell, you're like, oh my God, get that out of here. I don't want anyone to see that, because you're at your lunar opposition. You know what I mean? Those things that make you feel safe and cozy and comfy. You're like, get that as far away from me as possible. Yeah. And then you turn 27 years old and you get your progress, you know, lunar return. And then you do really want that stuffed animal.
That checks out, actually. Yeah. Kristen and I talk a lot on the podcast about nostalgia magic into like the adult witch years. And that's such an interesting lens to view that through.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like you mentioned, you've been a horoscope writer for Vice since 2015. And can you share a little bit about your approach to horoscopes and what it's like to write daily and monthly horoscopes for folks?
Sure. I love doing it. Every morning when I wake up and I go to work, I thank God for my job. I'm literally obsessed with it. I love doing it. My approach, well, I use what's called a solar chart for each zodiac sign. So for example, if I'm writing the horoscope for Aries, I'll just pull up a chart for that day that I'm writing the horoscopes. And I'll take a look and say, all right, let's say the moon is in Taurus. If it's an Aries solar chart, then I see, okay, moon in Taurus is like the solar second house. Maybe I'm going to talk about money for that day. So that's kind of my approach. That's generally what I do. And that's kind of what I advise my students to do when they're studying with me and they're thinking about writing horoscopes. And in terms of writing, you know, I try to outline as much as possible. You want to get as many words on the page as you possibly can. And then I go through and just edit until it looks good. And people can find writing daily horoscopes or weekly horoscopes very challenging because it's something, it's relentless. You know, it's, if you take on a horoscope writing job and you haven't been writing frequently, it can feel like you have a homework assignment every day of like writing a big essay, you know? So unless you're used to writing and you love writing, it can be very difficult. But what I want to let everyone know is that it is a muscle like anything else. And the more you do it, the more it's going to come naturally to you. I'm lucky. I really love writing. So it never felt like a homework assignment to me, but I know that it can feel that way for a lot of people. So I would say if you're really passionate about astrology and you do like writing about it, just keep practicing, keep doing it, because even though it might feel like a struggle the first week or two, once you get in a groove, you'll be in the groove and then you'll be golden. And then just don't stop.
It's great writing advice.
Yeah.
And do you have any advice for aspiring astrologers in general? I know you do a lot of teaching and mentorship.
Yeah. In general, study with as many different people as possible. Try to get lots of different perspectives. What other advice would I give? Get your ideas out there. You know, whether you're using social media or you have a blog, or maybe you have no interest in being on the internet, just find a local coffee shop or maybe a local bookstore that has astrology books and put together an astrology circle or something like that. Like, get your ideas out there, share your ideas. It's very rewarding to do so, and it can really boost your confidence and give you a lot of practice, and it'll get you a lot of feedback because people are going to disagree with you. And that is part of like the spice of learning, you know? And so get your ideas out there. Don't, you know, hold them in wondering when will be my time to shine. Go out there and just start shining, share it with the world. People will be excited to interact with it. And I know it can feel really hard when you're first starting a blog or maybe a social media page and you don't really have very many followers yet. It can be really disheartening when you don't see like the likes and all of that. But if you keep doing it and you're consistent, I really think consistency is key. If you're consistent, a following will naturally evolve from that. And if you're not finding what you want online in terms of community, find it in person, in real life. You know, if you get 20 likes on something, it can feel disappointing, but if 20 people show up to your astrology circle in person, you're going to feel like a rock star. So you should do that, because that's 20 people who you'll get to share ideas with and build community with. And it's kind of what astrology is all about.
It feels like a perfect project for Aries season too, right? Yeah. Just like get out there and do the thing.
Yeah.
Annabelle, what upcoming projects are you most excited about right now? I know that in addition to your books and writing, you have a candle collab with Snakes for Hair, as well as Marissa Zappas for a perfume, Annabelle's birthday cake. Are there any other surprises and offerings our listeners can look forward to?
Yes. So I have my astrology mentorship coming up in April. It is April 5th, 12th, 19th, and 26th. And I'm really excited about it. I have been teaching astrology for many, many years. I can't even remember how long, I guess since 2009. But I've been teaching this mentorship in one form or another. It used to be in person, but now it's been online for the last, since the pandemic began. But I've been doing this kind of version of this mentorship, I think since 2016. Yeah, since autumn 2016. So I love teaching. It's one of my favorite aspects of astrology because it kind of combines everything I love. I get to do some writing, I get to share my ideas, and I get to talk with people about their charts and about their people with astrology, about their ideas about astrology. So the astrology mentorship program, the way that it works is that there is a 2-hour live session each week where we meet on Zoom. It's a small, I try to keep it a small group. So everyone has an opportunity to share, to ask questions, and to really like connect with me. It's not like you're in a sea of like hundreds of people on Zoom. And so there's the 2-hour live. And then each week there's also one-on-one email correspondence where I give homework and you can either use your own chart or you can use a different chart and you do the homework. And then I respond as thoroughly as I can. So this is definitely the kind of class where you will get what you put in. So if you never do the homework, then that's not really going to give me an opportunity to really dive deep into the chart with you. But if you do, that gives me a chance to really work with you on a deep level. So if you're someone who really wants to explore your chart or explore astrology in a deep way, doing the homework and being able to interact with me one-on-one privately like that, I think is a very valuable thing. So that's coming up this April, and I love teaching this class. We're going to be talking about my formula for chart interpretation. Basically, the goal being that you will be able to pick up any chart and always be able to have something to say about it. It really helps any kind of astrologer who's looking to really improve being a consulting astrologer. So being able to sit with people one-on-one and look at their chart and facilitate a conversation. And it's also really good for people who want to write about astrology or write horoscopes, because in addition to talking about the chart formula that I use, I also go into horoscope writing techniques. And I'm also really happy to mentor people about we don't talk about this in the live class, but one-on-one, if people are interested, I'm always happy to help people figure out how to pitch things or to work on that side of things professionally. So this is an astrology mentorship. It's not a beginner's class. However, if you're a beginner with a lot of confidence, I think the class will be fine for you. But overall, this class is really geared towards people who are either professional astrologers or who want to be professional astrologers or who want to be consulting astrologers and who want to engage with astrology in that kind of official way in some way. So I'm really excited about that class, and people seem to really love the class. So I hope that some of you will think about joining who are listening.
Mm-hmm. Mentorship is so important and special.
Yeah.
And where can our listeners connect with you and with your work and your writing?
Yeah. So my website is annabellegatt.com, ANNABELGAT.com. And in terms of social media, the place where I'm at the most frequently is Instagram, where my username is @AnnabelleGatt.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Annabelle, and listeners on Magic and Alchemy, a podcast from Tamed Wild. Again, we're Kate Ballou and Kristen Lisenby. You can find us online at K8Ballou and at East and Alchemy. Send us all of your questions, comments, or just say hello via email at podcast@tamedwild.com. You can view all the amazing offerings from Tamed Wild on their Instagram @TamedWild or on the blog tamedwild.com.
Join us for next week's episode when we talk signs of spring. Just a reminder that magic and alchemy are always available to those who know where to look for it. So mote it be or something better. Until next time.